Tova, welcome to Law and Disorder.
Thank you so much.
Tova, the Sugar Center, when it came into being, I was so thrilled to see that your good work would honor the, not famous, because if we had working people writing history rather than the people who do write our history, sugar would be a household word in the United States, but he's not. But when I saw that it was going to be called the Sugar Center, I remembered the stories about Sugar, who was the great attorney for the auto workers when they were struggling to form the United Auto Workers Union back in the 30s. I remember that he was then the founder of what became the Goodman Crockett firm, which when I was practicing in Detroit was the great movement law firm in the city. Then I saw that the Sugar Center was formed initially with grants that came out of the Goodman Crockett firm. So I wanted to ask you for your reminiscences about Maurice Sugar. I know he wrote that famous song, Soup Song.
That's right.
And I'm not going to embarrass you by asking you to sing it, although Heidi might.
If I had a little prep, you might have gotten me to. No, I think actually Maurice Sugar is a wonderful example of the kind of person that really was such a model for all of us, because not only did he have his political passions and really do tremendous legal work on behalf of the movement, but he also was someone who saw the importance of the cultural side of a movement, and he wrote folks, well, I guess we don't call them folk songs if we know who wrote them, but popular songs that, you know, including the Soup Song, but others as well. He also was one of the people behind the creation of the Buck Dinner in Detroit. I won't go into the details on that.
I've been to Buck Dinners.
I bet you have.
That's when all the guys in the Goodman firm would go up north, go deer hunting, they'd bring back the meat, and they'd have a dinner and eat deer meat.
That's right.
I don't think that's as PC now as it was 40 years ago.
They didn't just eat it, but they, when they first started doing it, it was in the height of the Depression, and they were providing a meal for really anybody who needed it. It's turned into a real fundraiser for social action and social justice organizations throughout the Detroit area, but at its beginning, it was really come, take what you need, give what you can, which is, you know, of course, a wonderful idea. I have to say that being a Jew from Philadelphia myself, I was shocked when I found out that these lefty Union Jews from the 30s were actually going out and hunting and killing deer. It didn't really sit with my understanding of our culture, but I'll tell you, they did some great, great things.
And what were your people, hunter and gatherers?
No, you know, more of the small merchants, you know, run a little luncheonette, give people a little soup.
Well, tell us what the mission of the Sugar Center is.
I'm happy to. The Sugar Law Center, our mission is really to help the disenfranchised, the oppressed, and those struggling for social justice in any way, shape, or form. We have, over the years, really focused most, although certainly not all, of our efforts, which include both litigation, policy, as well as research. Most of our efforts have been focused on workplace rights. And as I say, that's not to the exclusion of other forms of economic justice, but really with the understanding that people's chance of a decent livelihood and a dignified existence for their family does depend very strongly on what rights the law entitles them to in the workplace and how well they're able to enforce those rights. And that's really something that is underserved throughout the U.S. Many progressive lawyers, as I'm sure you're both aware, are very focused, as they need to be, on all of our civil rights, on questions like police misconduct. There's certainly an abundance of issues on which people need to fight back. But the base issue of how are your conditions at work? Are you getting paid for the work that you're doing? Are you getting paid decently? And, you know, do you have a chance to advance without discrimination? These issues really are underserved.
We're really interested in hearing about some of the work that you've been doing with Walmart and Wackenhut. Could you give us an overview of how you got into this line
Absolutely.
Of work?
Absolutely. I'm thrilled to. And, of course, as I'm sure your listeners are aware, the share of the private sector workforce in the U.S. that is unionized has been declining steadily until the point where now in the private sector, I believe it's around 8% of workers actually are members of unions.
And Walmart's not unionized.
Walmart is absolutely not
unionized.
And
I know you've been litigated with them. Tell us about that.
Yeah, well, so we were contacted by a few of these major unions that are trying to unionize some of these mega corporations, as Heidi described. Our first arrangement was with the United Food and Commercial Workers, who are trying to reform Walmart, and I'll tell you a little bit about that. And then we've more recently formed a similar arrangement with the Service Employees International Union in their campaign to unionize Wackenhut Security Industries, which is a whole set of companies that provide essentially guard services around the world, actually.
And now also private prison work.
Oh, in any event, these unions are really taking a different approach that I think is really essential. And again, you may well be aware of it, but it's being called comprehensive campaigns. And the idea is that when you're dealing with these massive, massive corporations that have, of course, terribly deep pockets and are willing to go to any lengths to prevent workers from unionizing, that if you try to organize on a site-by-site basis where you hold an election at one work site and then you manage to gather cards, hold an election at another work site, that you really are up against sort of repeatedly the enormous resources of the other side without gaining a whole lot of traction. And so the concept of the comprehensive campaign is really to go after public opinion and put pressure on the management of the entire corporation to really understand that it will cost them something not to deal with unions. But what we've been involved in is that what both of these unions are trying to do as they tackle these big companies is they are inviting individual workers to tell their stories of what has happened to them. And, of course, the unions want these stories so that they can identify the right organizing issues and the right issues on which to exert pressure. But the unions also feel strongly that they want to provide real help to these individual workers, even though the workers are not yet members and may not anytime soon be union members. They want to be able to give them help in pursuing their individual claims. And that, too, can be a form of pressure on the company. Not to mention, if enough of the claims look like they put together a pattern, then there could be room for a class action, which could, of course, be quite powerful in forcing these companies to the table. We take the calls. It's now gotten to be hundreds of calls that come in to us from workers anywhere in the country who work for these behemoth corporations. And when they have a problem, an issue at work where their supervisor has done the wrong thing, they call us to see what legal action is possible. If they have a case that actually can lead to redress in court, we will find them a local attorney who is on side, understands the issues, and will work with us to help them press their individual claim.
When this happens, do the employees experience workplace retaliation?
Excellent question. I would say, to the extent that the workers are making issues out of these claims, of course, many of them are experiencing retaliation, and John will give you some examples of that. On the other hand, I don't think that their involvement of us as a resource has yet been recognized by the corporate entities or the local managers, who generally are the ones responsible for the retaliation. I don't think we've been recognized as a piece of that. I think we're sort of under the radar.
Under the radar, I was going to say.
Yeah. I mean, we are a resource. We're helping folks. Frankly, a lot of the time, what we help them with is not even necessarily getting formal representation, but understanding how to frame their claim within the company system so that they can get better treatment. Even an EEOC hearing, any of which may not require them to have an attorney present, but boy, they can sure use some advice on how to present themselves to the arbitrator.
And Tova, I assume that the center is keeping meticulous records about all of these claims.
Oh, you should see our database.
And if somebody wanted to call you, what number would they call?
They tend to call through the unions, and I'll get John to give out that information. Certainly anyone who wants to can always call us directly, and they don't have to be associated with either of these employers, can always call us directly. Unfortunately, we do not have an 800 number, but 313-962-6540. We're happy to hear from workers anywhere who are having a problem with their boss. If there's legal action to be taken, we will help them find representation. Sometimes there isn't, and sometimes, unfortunately, we have to say to people, you're getting screwed, but there's no legal recourse.
Thank you, Tova.
Thank you, Tova.